Hi, my name is Ian Parry, and welcome to What the Future, the podcast produced by Future Leaders Mentoring. Today, we're chatting with Patrick Quinton-Smith, the Gen Z coach, in one of our special podcast series on leaders' life stories. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Ian. Very happy to be here.
Cool. Really looking forward to this podcast today. I mean, we've spoken and we've known each other on LinkedIn and off LinkedIn for the past couple of years, and I've kind of followed your career from days of Bulb and into this new endeavor that you've got now, and always been interested with your drive and your passion and your enthusiasm for things. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this kind of unfolds with the questions we've got today. So
Thanks.
let's jump in then. So Patrick, tell us who you are and what your role is today.
Sure. So, yeah, who am I? See, I'm Patrick Quinton Smith. I'm 27, soon to be 28. I'd say I'm as you said, quite an enthusiastic, driven person. I'm very adventurous. I like to put myself out of my comfort zone and try new things. Yeah, and I want to have a make a bit of a difference wherever I can. I grew up in Wiltshire, the youngest of five kids. Yeah, I've been very fortunate to have grown up in this like the same house our whole life. So, my parents been together 37 years. We lived in the house 37 years. My oldest brother's
Breaking.
36, or will be, and I'm yeah, as I said soon to be 28. So yeah, got two older sisters, two older brothers, and yeah, all been great influences. So I guess that's a little bit about who I am, and then what I do. So what I do today. So I'm founder of training and coaching consultancy, the Gen Z Coach. And at the Gen Z Coach, we help businesses unlock the untapped potential of Gen Z, and we do this by coaching Gen Z teams to create high performing teams. So we do group training sessions and one-on-one coaching to, as I said, create high-performing teams. But also, the other side of that is providing insights to senior leaders to help them understand Gen Z, how to, what motivates them and how to communicate with them to really get the best out of them. And what that does, it bridges generational gaps, which, solves a lot of business problems. But all of this together increases productivity, retention, and engagement. So that is what my business does, and that's what I do.
Cool. Such a vital thing for the moment, I would have thought, actually, because there's a lot of myths and lots of things flying around about the different generations and how they work together and what they feel about each other. And certainly, what you've got going on here is a way of tying these things together. But ultimately, yeah, there's a lot of soft skills in there, lots of good stuff there, but the return on investment and the deliverable within the business, whether it's people being retained for longer or just feeling better about their job and higher performance, as you mentioned, really important things that I think sometimes it's harder to translate that in the softer skills industries between, these good conversations and bottom line performance.
Yeah, you're right. But there's so much data on if people are happier, then they're going to be more productive. And if they're more productive, they're going to be, producing more, and that results in revenue for the business. And I don't know where the data's from, but losing somebody costs about 2.5 times someone's salary. So the benefits, to retaining people, and the financial benefits are huge, so costly. I think people don't consider that the whole process of hiring, retraining, the cost of having that gap whilst someone has left is massive. So, if you're reducing costs and you're increasing productivity, turns out that's more profit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, slight change in direction in the podcast now. So let's go right back. Now you've already said, the house you live in, or the house your parents have lived in, they've lived in all their lives. So there's been lots of memories there. But can you remember what your first memory, what when you were growing up was?
Yeah, I can. I've got two, but the very first one was of me crawling, which is crazy. I must have been crawling, or I was very small and walking in the garden, seeing my sisters playing with some Polly Pocket toy, and it was very sunny. But the one that really stands out was Easter. So I think my birthday is March 30th. So it's always around sort of the Easter weekend, and I just remember we must have had a part like a big party. It might have even been my birthday, but we had a massive Easter egg hunt and like so much energy and people running around. And I think I remember being with my grandmother, my dad's mom, my nanny, like was absolutely legend, like one of my best friends. And I remember sort of her sort of taking me around, and yeah, that's a good memory. I still love Easter egg hunts to this day. I still get the same level of excitement. I still do them where I can. So clearly, yeah, left a good happy memory for me.
Well, that's nice. That is nice. And it's really interesting, I find, when I'm speaking to people on this podcast, that those early memories and how they create connections with kind of who we are today and the things we enjoy today. Without simplifying it, clearly you still like Easter eggs and you like the sort of the foraging for the Easter eggs, but that kind of family environment that you can clearly kind of anchor your thoughts to.
Definitely. Family is so important to me, and that energy. So being in a big family, there's, I don't know, with the sort of numbers there is, that there creates this kind of energy and this fun that I just love. I love being with my family in a group environment. It's always just really fun. I don't know. It's just something. We've always got music. It's always some dancing or some singing, and it's yeah, that's something kind of been core to, I guess, family life. So yeah, something I still love to this day. You know what? When you said foraging for Easter eggs, I know this might sound a bit ridiculous, but it made me think of, that's kind of what I love with coaching. I'm kind of like, I'm almost like digging around, like there's some gold here, there's some so on, and I kind of love trying to find it. And that just made me think of that as you said that.
And it's so many times on these podcasts, when we're talking about that first memory and the way that people sort of lead today, there's often a really strong connection between and whether it's because memories are really interesting, aren't they? It's kind of like as you go through life, you kind of fill in the blanks on what those memories were based on conversations you've had. So whether it's a actual memory of what you were experiencing then, or a kind of painted by numbers memory based on conversations you've had since, I guess it doesn't really matter. It's how it makes you feel, and obviously you go through life then with that memory in your mind.
It's really this actually kind of this actually hit me quite hard, to be honest, Ian, because you saying the connections of your first memory sort of impacts the way that we operate later on. Like what I just described around that energy, I guess, with a group of people, that's kind of what I try and create with teams, and that's what I love. That's why I love working with teams. I love creating that energy and feeling the energy in a room and understanding like how the dynamics maybe aren't right and how we can develop that to create a good environment. That's so I feel like you're spot on just from that. So that's actually really interesting.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more then. Let's talk about your sort of journey to your current role, because as I mentioned earlier, you kind of we met when you were first at Bulb. But let you do the talking. Tell us about your journey to where you are today.
So, probably I was introduced to the Future Leaders midway through. So just about midway through my Bulb career. I guess what led me to do what I do today was my sort of early experience at Bulb, which was like I love the business. Absolutely, I really did. Gave me so much, as one of the most incredible experiences I've had those 4 years. But the early stages were really, really tough. Like I really struggled mentally. It's probably the worst mental health I had in my life. So finishing university, I thought I had a good idea of what I wanted. And I knew I wanted to make a difference somehow. I knew I wanted to be in either energy, food, or water, doing something that was like quite macro. And I always wanted to work for a, fast growing startup. And when one of my brother's friends told me about Bulb, he told me about Pod Point, which is a electric vehicle charging station that was growing quickly, still going strong. But then I saw Bulb and I saw the growth it had. I was like, I have to work for them. Like, this just looks insane. So that was like tunnel vision, single-minded, got to work with them. I did not care what the role was. It was a customer service role. I was like, I actually don't care. I remember in the interview, they said, like, why do you want to do this role? And I was like, I don't. I just want to work in this business. And they were like, bloody hell, okay. But, the role was really tough, and the company was going through hyper growth. So it had 40,000 members, customers joining a week, which was ridiculous. Wasn't sustainable. So the when I first joined, the queue was about a minute and a half, customer service queue, and then it got to about an hour. Anyway, this is kind of the long story, but the pressure was seriously intense, seriously intense. And in the business, it the demands got a lot. And if a lot of young people, if you don't know what you actually want to do, and you don't know like what the next step is, then you don't know why you're going through the suffering.
Of
Like,
course, yeah.
there's no that vision, then you're like, why am I putting up with this? Like, so I felt really trapped, because I did not know what to do next at all. But I just knew I was desperate to get out. So I had a date in my diary to quit. And I remember telling my brother, I was like, I'm going to quit by this date if nothing changes. And he was like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, I'm just going to, I'm think I'm going to book a ticket to India, want to go back and just work it out. And he was a bit like, okay. He's a good brother. He didn't jump down my throat and like, can't do that. But he was, tell me a bit more about that. What are the risks? Anyway, I then, through that General Assembly, I saw a talk on how to future-proof your career, and it was basically a woman who set up a coaching sort of agency, and I persuaded the business to invest in that coach for me, and that was just a mind-blowing experience from somebody who just really listened to me and asked me questions to transform my whole mindset, my whole energy, my everything. Got so clear on what I was passionate about, what gave me energy, what my strengths were, and actually what I wanted, and helped me realize I wanted to be in a leadership position. I wanted to develop others. That's where I'd be at my best, working, developing a team. And that was it. Again, single minded. I was like, this is what I need to do. Help me overcome all my limits, things that are holding me back. And I think in about 4 months, there was a team leader roles that opened up in the business. Good thing about fast growing business is those types of opportunities came quite quickly. So I was very fortunate and I capitalized on it. Got into a leadership position and I just thrived. I absolutely loved it. Was one of the most engaged I've ever been. And yeah, I would ended up from that, ended up leading multiple high performing teams, including a collections team that was, we grew to initially from 15 people to 240 people, which was pretty mental experience. So learned loads, and that team ended up collecting an additional £8.3 million in 1 year, which, yeah, as I said, talk about return on investment. That all came from coaching. So I would have left. Don't know what would happen, but I probably would have left. And that just shows to me the power of coaching, what it can do, and that whole transformation is what inspired me to do what I do today. It was earlier on when I was starting to lead teams, I started investing in myself to learn how to coach. I was like, this guy did this for me. I invested in some coaching programs, started using it with the team and getting really good results. And that was noticed by leadership. And I was like, I got to do more of this. And then I invested to become in like a year's qualification with the International Coaching Federation, which is for people who want to be coaches generally. I didn't know at that point I 100% wanted to be a coach, but I thought, well, if I do this, I'll have the option if I want to. But if I don't, I'll just be a better coach, which is working pretty well. So that's just a life skill that I knew I wanted to have. Yeah, invest in that. And then as I got into it, I realized I've never been so obsessed with anything than I was studying coaching. I didn't like studying. So, and then, yeah, and then I quit. And I quit my job when I realized I had to. I went down to 4 days a week at Bulb. They're very good about that. But then it was that one day, just my energy was just totally different. And every fiber of my being was like, you have to quit and work this out. So yeah, that was a bold move, but here I am today.
Amazing. So there's a couple of things that really sort of jump out to me in that sort of journey you described. I guess the first thing was that conversation with your brother about the deadline to quit and kind of what next and how clearly he's got a coaching mentality as well, isn't he? It's not a don't do that, do this. It's a okay, well, so tell me then what's kind of going on? What are you going to do? And those sorts of really open questions that don't make you feel judged. And kind of sounds like somebody's interested and they're helping you rather than, you know, sometimes I guess as a family member, if you hear somebody's going to do something quite so drastic, there's an instinct to kind of go, whoa, hang on, what the hell are you doing? But in that moment, I could just tell by the way you were talking and your face how kind of supported and like almost coached you were as well.
Yeah, you're spot on. He's a great brother. He's naturally, I say naturally, yeah, he is naturally sort of got that sort of coaching mentality, but always very calm. I mean, he's done very well. He's managing director of First Choice travel brand. So he's sort of, yeah, I'm lucky to had him at that point. Just yeah, was very calm, and he probably in his mind was a bit like, "What the fuck are you doing?" But he didn't. Yeah, he didn't show it. But so yeah, it was a thing with that because it could push you the other way. But you know, so
This is it. This is it.
made me find my own, made me find helped me find another route.
And that to me, it's almost like, you know, if you're not using that as an example in your sort of day-to-day coaching conversations of, you know, the different road you could have gone down personally if your brother as a, you know, as a guide, as a mentor, as a coach, had been harder on you and directed you rather than interested and asking you questions, which route you could have gone down. You could have been super sort of stubborn and kind of go, well, actually, I'm going to quit today now
Yeah.
because this is my journey. Thanks very much.
You're so right. And actually, I forgot. So I found out the coaching through General Assembly, and my brother, I think at the time, was sending me links from General Assembly. Well, he actually just said follow them because you might get some inspiration about courses and things. So from that, I saw Future Proof Your Career and thought, I think I need to do that. So yeah, he planted a seed of inspiration actually, which developed. So yeah, definitely earn one for that.
That is super cool. So thinking about kind of your life so far, is there anything you want to share with people listening today around, you know, life lessons that have stuck with you? You know, doesn't have to be one, but you know, if you have one, that's cool too.
Yeah. And I'll start this one. The first one starts with a family trip to India in 2006. We went to India and I was 2006, I think I was about 11, maybe 12. And, you know, 12-year-old Christmas or something I've always been super excited about, you know, very enthusiastic, same kind of Easter. It was kind of like excited time for me. And I was then told, you know, the day before Christmas Day, so Christmas Eve, that we were going to an orphanage. And my 12-year-old reaction was, what the hell? Like, how could you do this to me? I was like, what? Like, that's not Christmas.
No.
You know, and I was upset and I was annoyed. And yeah, I remember my parents, they planned this. They bought lots of toys. They'd organized for, you know, to have a big meal, like a big buffet there. But I didn't really understand this. I kind of, I was like, oh, they're doing a nice thing, but it's not nice for me. And got there, and I remember we had all these toys, and we were in the courtyard of this orphanage. Everyone was set like the same age as me. And I remember being a bit really struck by that, really struck by that, that they're all the same age. And I was pretty scared, to be honest. And then we put all the toys out, expecting them to be playing around, da, 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 and they grabbed the toys and like hid them in their rooms because they had no possessions. And that was valuable to them. And I mean, I didn't cry then, but that almost, thinking about it, almost brought me to tears. I was so shocked. Then the rest of the day proceeded to get to know everyone there. And from our perspective, they had terrible conditions where they're living. But they were so happy. Like they were so joyous. Like, and they're playing and their interactions with each other and interactions with us. And that, and this, these kids were the same age as me. I remember looking at them and you're the same as me, but you're there and I'm here. But I think that what that and being in India taught me and seeing people in the slums is that happiness is an inside job. It's not, it is an inside job, and it's not about how much you have or where you live, etc. It's about how you relate to your external circumstances. And we have control over the way that we think and our attitude towards certain situations. And I think people in that orphanage really taught me that in that moment. So, and that, again, that's driven me to do what I do today in many ways. I'm saying that fulfillment is something from within. Success, again, it's something that happens from within, and almost rewiring our brains to that approach is something I'm very passionate about. But yeah, that really stuck with me, and similar sort of lessons and memories from different places I've been traveled as have shown me that. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah, definitely. And I do like that sort of phrase, happiness is an inside job. And that's a really good one. It reminds me of, so there's another guy that I've done some podcasting with, and some leadership training with as well, a chap called Piers Thurston. And he's very much about this kind of idea that we're one thought away from happiness and one thought away from sadness, because it's our thoughts that kind of drive us down either direction. It's, as you say, it's an inside job.
It really is. And the more I delve into this, the more it just proves itself to me that our beliefs and our thoughts are self-fulfilling prophecies. Like our perception becomes reality. What we expect is kind of what we experience, and that is what we get. So yeah, and we but well, for the time we get to choose, in the moment we might not sometimes pick negative thughts that can come in, but we'll learn to recognize them and decide if we want to accept or reject that.
Yeah, absolutely. Some really good lessons there. So thinking about things a little bit more on the practical level now, are you somebody that loves a daily routine, or are you somebody that just sees things happening in front of you and you sort of play what you see in front of you? Do you have a daily routine?
Yeah, I do have a daily routine. It's really important to me, to be honest. I mean, without one, if I'm being honest, I'm bit of a mess. Like, I think, so what my daily routine, meditating. So meditation, I don't always like that word meditation, but I do have a meditation practice, but a lot of it is they're different exercises just to help us feel in our physical, be in our physical body. So practicing different senses. So whether that's listening to things that are far away, listening to things that are close, feeling the temperature of, different objects, the texture of objects, or just really looking at something really carefully, looking at the shades of it, looking at the shape of it. So you're or just, even like rubbing your hands like that and really just feeling physical sensations. Might sound a bit weird, but if you're in your body, you're not in your head. That's how we can calm our minds down. So doing that in the morning kind of like charges, I guess, calms the mind, which means you're less likely to be hijacked by stressful situations and manage stresses better. But I try and do that throughout the day as much as I can. But I think the biggest thing for me, one of these things is journaling. So I have I have a remarkable which I can create templates for journals and create copies every day. So I have a one for the morning.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what am I excited about? Anticipating any challenges. If I was my own performance coach, what would I tell myself? Yeah, things like this. So I have basically questions that help me set intention for what I want to do that day. And then in the evening, I'm reflecting things I'm grateful for, biggest wins, things I could have done better, and then what's on the agenda for tomorrow. And then I've got a bit of a free flow. So that really just clears my mind, helps me think, sets intention. And I think the gratitude habit has been seriously helpful.
Yeah.
Just feeling great. And yeah, I exercise in the morning, got a Peloton if it's raining. Yeah, running, these types of things. So yeah, so journaling, meditating, exercise, those are, I guess, my main three things. But I kind of see all these little things that are kind of like table legs underneath a table of mental health and well-being. You kind of, the more you can put underneath, the stronger that is. And if
Yeah.
a couple get knocked away, it's still, you still got some stability.
Yes. Yeah, no, I see that analogy. And as you say, that it doesn't always matter then the stress that you're putting yourself under. If you've still got those pillars, those legs to support you, you can kind of trust in the process almost.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just, again, stops me from being hijacked by our reptilian flight, security brain, which stress alert, which we can kind of stay in the
Yes.
same state that helps us make good decisions.
Yes. So I could imagine then there'd be a day where, 15 things come towards you, good, bad, or indifferent, but they're lots of different things. And you could allow your mind to run away, but you've got processes in place that allow you to stop, to sort of think about it in a logical process that's works for you and has worked for you,
Yeah.
and where you are trusting that process to just get you through what's coming towards you, and to sort of download it and to think it through a bit better. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. And it, I'm quite like, I don't know the word strict. That may sound like I'm harsh on myself, but I guess disciplined with it, because for the times that I don't do it, especially if I'm not journaled, if I've not exercise, I haven't meditated, I'm just so much more reactive and snappy, and I you just react to situations rather than like taking the time to respond the way you want to. And it just, you feel more, I feel more anxious. It kind of, the wheels sort of slowly come off. So it's really important to me, because as I said, I'm very different if I don't. I'm less of me. I get the worst side of me if I'm not kind of doing these things. So I've definitely learned, I can see it and feel it when I don't. What about you?
I'm terrible for sort of daily routines, actually. So I'm somebody that really dislikes sort of paperwork and sort of admin and those sorts of things. So what I tend to do is enjoy podcasts like this and workshops and things that sort of give me energy. I guess over the years I've kind of really got to understand what I enjoy in a working day. And I'll tend to plan my week and look at my week and kind of think, well, so if I've had 2 days of sort of workshops, I'll try and plan a third day then where I'm a bit more sort of able to relax a little bit more, able to sort of make sure that I'm checking in with myself. And it's not necessarily a something that I deliberately do, that the checking in with myself. It's more of a, okay, am I feeling okay? Am I comfortable with where things are at the moment? What does sort of next week look like? So it's just a little bit of down temper. I'm not somebody, I've tried journaling, I've tried gratitude and those sorts of things, but I really struggle with the idea of that sort of starting the day with a process and ending the day with a process and writing things down. I've always struggled with with those sorts of things. So I've throughout my life tried to get into, even things like reading, but I really struggle. I cannot sit down for any period of time and open a book and read it. Even audiobooks, for instance, I struggle to get into those. I'm really kind of like a if you can't tell me something in 10 to 15 seconds, I've lost the sort of the thing on it. And that's a struggle for me. And I try and explain that to people I'm working with as best as I can so that they appreciate it's not necessarily them, but certainly if you're working with me, understand you need to sort of really come at me with lots of energy. You've got to explain your idea really quickly, get me on board, and then I'm with you.
Yeah, got you. So I like that you have learned actually just you're basically just designing your days so that you have energy and that you feel sort of calm and content. And I love the fact that you've got some time to check in with yourself. Like creating that space is so important to just check in, like how am I actually feeling? What adjustments do I need to make? Do I need to have a calmer day, tomorrow, et cetera. I think that's really, really important.
And as I say, I've tried lots of things, but the almost like the informal sort of daily routine kind of works better for me, actually.
Yeah. It's so interesting that people work so differently, and I get frustrated. People are like, this is what you kind of have to do. There are some things that work really well for some and well for others. I definitely like a bit of a routine. I like getting into a bit of a rhythm of stuff. It helps me just do things in more of a flow without thinking. I feel like I can waste so much time wondering on what to do next. My calendar is like filled out basically the whole day with what to do. But that's people are like, oh, that sounds so stressful, but it's not for me because I don't need to think. Okay, I'll do this now.
Well, absolutely. And it reminds me of a sort of a quote that somebody was using in a course I was on years ago, and it's different strokes for different folks. And it's literally exactly that. Everybody's different in the way that they want to do things. And for me, the informality of a daily routine works for you. You need something different. But it's not that, I'm unplanned and you're highly stressed. It's just we're different people. We approach the day differently. And at the end, by the end of the day, we're both hopefully happy that our approaches have got us through the day, and that's what works for us.
Yeah, exactly. But it makes me think of, have you read Atomic Habits or heard of
I have, and I get the weekly emails as well.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I just the quote, you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. I love that. I guess I'm early in my career and building a business, like I've got to have systems. It's the daily actions. I really believe that like everything, things that you do each day accumulate into like massive tangible impacts over time. So I find almost like comfort in that, just focus up on the process is so important. So having a routine makes all those little bits, the things that you need to kind of be consistent on with social media, et cetera. It just makes it easier. Let down to think about it as much.
No, good one. I think that's something that anybody listening to today's podcast, reading that book, or I managed to get through a whole audio book of that one.
Well done.
Probably in about 10 different sessions, but I managed to get through it. Definitely a recommendation, I would say. And as we're talking about people and different behaviors, it seems a nice little sort of step into bias. I'm really interested in clearly we come from different generations, but interested in understanding from your point of view, whether you think bias will be removed in your generation, actually.
It's a really interesting question. I think short answer, no. But I think we'll continue to make huge strides in mitigating it more. Like I think we'll always I think bias is, it takes constant work to check yourself. You have to, have online tests to help you see your own biases, because often we can't. Like, it takes work to identify your biases and to address them, to choose to address them and be proactive about it. So I think it's, you can't help the formation of some of the biases, but what we're doing as a society, we are becoming much more aware and educated of those biases and the impacts of that. And it's becoming more of a conversation, and discrimination is becoming obviously like unacceptable. So I think it's almost impossible to have it completely disappear. But I don't think people will suffer at the whims of it as much. It's become a lot less over the years, but I think that will definitely continue, I'm sure of that. But some people hold on to their bias and you can't sort of change that. Some people don't want to. It supports them in some way. So yeah. What are your thoughts?
I think generally, we always have bias. I think it's very much a human condition that we gravitate to people that sound like us, look like us, behave like us. It's kind of like the idea of a sort of a gang, a culture, a group of people. So I think that we're, as humans, we are built to have almost like an idea of kind of what we look like and who we want to gravitate towards. And that can sometimes be an unconscious thing. And if you've not experienced different cultures as you've grown up, if you've come from, so for instance, I came from the Welsh Valleys, and we had very little diverse culture where I came from. So it took me a number of years into my working career before I started to understand difference and those sorts of things. And that not necessarily a deliberate act on my behalf, but it's very much an unconscious thing that you sort of go through. So I think unconscious bias will certainly persist. But to your point, we're doing so much now to be aware of things and to make sure certainly bias doesn't penalize people, and we're open to, as individuals, to be educated on our biases and if they are impacting our thoughts and feelings and behaviors in a negative way, being comfortable to be pulled up on those and to kind of go, oh wow, I didn't realize that, didn't realize that at all. And I give you a really small example of this. So I was leading a group of people for an energy company, I would come in the morning and I would say to the guys, morning guys. I would say to the women, morning girls. And it took me a little while, or sorry, it took the ladies in the team a little while to say, hey Ian, this doesn't feel right. I don't feel comfortable with you calling us girls, because it feels a little bit like you're kind of demeaning us. And I was like, oh wow, I didn't see that. I wasn't kind of appreciating that. But knowing that, and just being open to that sort of feedback, I think it kind of allowed me to kind of step on and to be comfortable receiving that sort of feedback and then taking action with it and just kind of going, oh wow, okay, well, yeah, it certainly wasn't a deliberate exercise for me, but I can appreciate how something I was saying was making you feel. And thanks for telling me, because I would have carried on doing that without that knowledge.
It's really powerful when you can get that kind of feedback. It's kind of a bit of a shock as well sometimes. Sounds like it was for you.
Certainly it was. So Patrick, we're at the end of the podcast. We've whistled through this. We've learned a lot, but just finally, kind of really interested in where next for you, in your life.
Yes. So, to be honest, more of the same. Like, I'm in a really good place with the business at the moment. I'm found the niche. I'm really clear on the direction of what I want to achieve and where I'm going. Got some really exciting opportunities. So for me, it's having as big an impact as I'm humanly capable of doing, helping develop, helping businesses and young people thrive together. Like I helping young people find more fulfillment and success in their lives is something I'm really passionate about. So growing my business as much as possible in ways that I may not even know yet. So yeah, just continuing to develop myself as a coach as well. I just really believe in the power of coaching and training around, leadership, personal leadership, and these types of skills is just so important to me. And yeah, I wanna got an amazing relationship with my girlfriend. Continue that. Wanna have a nice family. I'm still very young, so I've got lots to look forward to.
Yeah, great. And hopefully we can keep in touch and I can kind of follow that journey with you. So thanks so much for taking part in today's podcast. Loads of different bits of insight to come through that. But I'm a big believer in just kind of not overthinking what I'm hearing and just kind of the things that really hit me at in the moment. So for me, it's kind of like you are somebody that's clearly really open to guidance. Along the way, whether it's subtle or deliberate or unconscious guidance, you've received some guidance, you've taken it, and you've thrived as a result of it, which I think is super important for people to take on board. Having a passion for what you do, you found that passion, and it's so helpful to have a mission actually, rather than I guess an old-fashioned career journey. I want to go from this job to this job to this job. And having that mission of helping people clearly resonates with you. And finally, that phrase you used, happiness is an insider job. That's really something that I hope people take away from today. Whether they understand how they can do it or not is another question. But just taking that away and kind of go, well, I'm in control of that. So if that's true, how do I achieve it? So so many things for people to take away, but they were the three things that really came out for me.
Great. Thank you. Well, I really enjoyed being on the podcast and having this conversation. I think what you're doing with the Future Leaders is awesome. So very aligned with what I'm doing. So yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
No worries, Patrick. Thank you very much. And as always, thank you for choosing to listen to What the Future. If you enjoyed this episode, then please hit subscribe and tell others about us. And finally, mentoring is a hugely valuable step on the leadership journey, and we're here to help. If you feel the same way, then please get involved. Tap the Join Us button on our webpage, which is www.futureleadersmentoring.com, and follow us on LinkedIn to get into the conversations we have there. But for now, goodbye, and we'll speak again soon.